Good evening, everybody. Coming to you live from beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. I'm Mike DePalma. To my right, I got Neil Lynch.
What's up, everybody?
To my left, I got Tony D.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little Family Feud real quick?
Yeah,
I'm
not?
Assuming it was the highest-rated Family Feud in the history of ever.
Yeah.
People, since that old dude was making out with chicks.
They signed you to like a 10-game show deal.
This might be my last show. I don't know if it's going to be a conflicting interest. I might have to sign away my rights to the Tri-State Sports Guys. If you haven't seen it, you got to check out Family Feud. The DePalma family represented ourselves well. So you got to check
it out. Against the who's?
Against the Ireland family.
Oh, boy.
They're related to, I believe,
distant cousins
from Cowboy down at O'Neill's. I'm pretty sure. We asked them. They don't even know it, but I'm sure they were related somewhere along the line. But so we're at Tri-State Sports Guys. Got a lot to get to today, so we're going to just get right into it, Neil. I figure we'll start out with baseball since we're sitting here starting the World Series right now. And there's really no place else to start than the Yanks. Yanks-Tigers. You know, I think people were down on the Yanks kind of all season. All second half, were they going to win the division? Were they going to make the playoffs, whatever? They wind up surging there at the end. Robinson Cano was unbelievable in September. Hit like 600 over the last 2 weeks. We talked about it going into the playoffs.
Yeah, he forgot to save that, though, for the postseason.
It was like, you talk about law of averages. Like, things average itself out. My man hit 600 for two over 2 weeks and then hit a zero spot up for like 30 at-bats.
Yeah, he set like a postseason record.
Postseason record. One of the best hitters on the team. If you were to say, one of the best hitters in the league, if you were to pick any major leaguer, in baseball, you would say that would never happen to him.
Yeah.
It'd probably be Robinson Cano.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't go into those kind of slumps. But it's like a perfect storm. Everything on their offensive side went wrong. Their pitching was great, and that was their worry all year long.
Yeah.
It's going to be their pitching. But it seems like year in, year out, since, you know, 2002, this is what's been going on with the Yankees. Their offense just doesn't get clutch hits in the playoffs. You start listing off guys that don't produce. They're the anti-90s Yankees.
Yeah.
We have guys that step up their game. Jimmy Leyritz hitting 8 playoff home runs.
Scott Brosius.
Scotty Brobro. Tino Baseball. Those guys that don't get out. You know.
Charlie Hayes.
Chucky Hayes, I believe. That's how we call them in my house. But, yeah, you know, all those guys, that they just don't have any of them. And you get into that series, Neil, I mean – what was the point? Was it after game two that you thought that they had no shot? Or were you – I mean, there were Yankee fans I know that were still holding out hope after 3-0. To me, it was game two once Jeter went down.
Yeah. Well, no, as soon as Jeter went down, I thought it was over because he's the face of the franchise. He's the
only guy that hits in the playoffs.
The guy's the most clutch hitter on the team. And, you know, he's the leader both in the dugout, on the field. You know,
yeah,
in the post game conferences, he's the guy that you look to kind of pull you up by the bootstraps when things are down, and when he's banged up and he's hurt, it's just not the same.
Yeah,
you know, you can't draw from his energy like you could when he's out there and he's making plays and hitting the ball. And you know, there was I forget which game was it was, but it was like, holy crap, we're just gonna throw everything out the window that got us here
game 3.
Go with this mishmash of people that. It just seemed like they were just rolling the dice and saying, we'll spitball here,
yeah.
See how it works out.
It was unbelievable, and we had talked about it, and I tweeted it once Jeter went down, and I'm not a huge believer in the leader in the clubhouse guy, rallies the team, but I actually think
you were the leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, when you're that guy, when you're the alpha male in the clubhouse, you kind of don't know it sometimes, you know? But that is one of the few I think baseball players in the league that can impact a team by not being it. And I think it's a handful, literally. Every team doesn't have one of those type of guys. Even you know these two teams here, they don't have that type of guy. Miguel Cabrera is not the Derek Jeter type of player. He's the best player in baseball.
Yeah, it's like Ichiro is playing well.
Yeah.
But like, are you going to rally around Ichiro? Is Ichiro going to give you a translated speech?
Yeah,
you know,
he's got
like
this guy.
You know, Ibanez is he looks like the dude from Game of Thrones that is after the dragons. Does he speak English? I don't even know if he does.
Yeah, he actually speaks. I don't know that he's got even a thick accent. When he gave his post-game interviews, he didn't sound – he might be American. I don't know. I don't know. But my thing was when 2 weeks ago we talked about the idea that the Yankee fans were calling to bench A-Rod, and I thought it was laughable. And I didn't even want to drop any order. You said you should drop any order, but you shouldn't bench him. They wind up, you know, that pinch hit home run by Ibanez, and we said it last week, it went to Girardi's head.
Yep.
And they thought, okay, well, we can get away without it.
It came back to bite him in the ass because it was Coke versus Ibanez. And normally, lefty-lefty, there was no way he would let that happen. But because Ibanez had come up big in the previous games, he left him in there. And you see,
he gets
what
the 3-2 slide piece.
Yeah.
But my thought was, once Jeter went down, they were done. But I said, this is the time you got to do – if you want to do something drastic, this is when you may – and I tweeted it. This is when you move Alex Rodriguez to shortstop, get his head – different, get his head in a different place, rejuvenate what he was when he was a shortstop.
Right, yeah.
And they did decide we're going to mix things up. They just went in the exact opposite direction.
Yeah.
Decided they wound up putting in a lineup, game three, where 33% of your lineup was completely different with the lineup that got you there. You know, obviously Jeter was out.
Never before seen throughout the season.
Yeah, never before seen. And then again, in game four, he gets benched again. And I'll give O credit, a former co-host on the show. He said, this will mean, once he got benched, they told me they're never going to play A-Rod because all they have is righty starters. And I was right. And I'm like, but they can't really just relegate this guy to the bench. And then the idea is, okay, well, you have this big righty back come off the bench. But like you just said, you have a spot with a lefty who's very, Coke is very good against lefties. And you're going to leave a lefty platoon player
right
up there.
Yeah.
A guy who really hadn't got a lot of at-bats versus lefties during the season. If you remember, all season long, this guy pounded righties and sat against lefties, and Fat Andrew Jones would usually play.
Yeah.
So you have a guy who hasn't had any experience. It's almost the same thing with Gardner, and Gardner gives some good at-bats, but I think he went 0 for 8 in his at-bats.
Yeah.
You have a guy who hadn't played all year long, hadn't started since April 16th or something like that, and you're going to be like, oh, yeah, why don't you just go play against Justin Verlander.
Yeah.
Right, throws about 106.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Have at it there, Brett. I mean, it was just, man, there are times when I find myself defending Girardi because I'm like, well, look at how he overcomes these injuries. But then decisions like this, it's just, I think it's indefensible that they benched A-Rod. I said it before, I thought it was laughable they were even considering it. And then it happened. And look what happened. Chavez didn't get a hit and made bad plays in the field.
Yeah, well, that was what was bothersome was, why is everyone picking on A-Rod when it's across the board, it's a problem,
you know,
it's a epidemic throughout the clubhouse. So, and now there are all these rumors that he's odd. Like, it's amazing how much difference a week makes, or even a couple of days. He gets benched and all of a sudden he's no longer a Yankee in everyone's minds.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no,
he's definitely on someone else's team.
Right. And we talked about that last week. I talked about, you guys weren't here yet. I said, all these talks about trading him and where's he going to go. He's got an untradeable contract, completely untradeable. There's no way he's not a Yankee next year.
Yeah.
They owe him $30 million a year for the next 5 years. Even if they ate $20 million a year, and this is the Yankees who are trying to get under this luxury cap.
Yeah.
They're going to eat $20 million a year that's gone, and then somebody else has to say, yeah, we'll pay this guy who can't even start for a team in the playoffs $10 million a year for the next 5 years? Who's going to do that?
Yeah, and on top of that, Carton today, I think this morning, was saying that Josh Hamilton's going to be a Yankee.
Yeah. That's my little – I don't think he'd be terrible with the Yankees. I know that Ports is all great, but you watch how he faded. You watch how the boos got to him there.
Say, what's it going to do to him in New York?
This dude gets booed. He'll get booed opening day if he goes 0-4. It'll be bad in a hurry. That's a horrible thing. But I can see
– the world's greatest obituary, though.
Yeah, he's going to go out with – man, he'll be hanging out in a cornfield, Carlton Fisk somewhere. Just hanging out in a car. Look at, dude, I got this Coke can, it's Apple, we're going to make it happen. Now, look, but I can see it happening. At this point, they're calling for all these crazy changes for the Yankees. The problem is, you look at their roster, there's not a lot of changes they could make.
Exactly.
There really is. I think it's a foregone conclusion that Swisher's gone.
Yeah.
They have an option for him, or maybe he's a straight-out free agent. He'll be gone because he's never hit in the playoffs, and that's what the Yankees come down to. He's got one of the worst postseason offensive numbers of anybody ever played. You got Granderson that has a club option for $13. I had posted on Facebook that maybe they should consider trying to trade him because he has a lot of value.
Yeah.
He's still a very good outfielder. Strikes out a ton, but a guy that gets you 40 home runs. I mean, he's got a lot of value and a lot of teams would want him. But I almost think that the Yankees, who are the Yankees going to get to replace him? Who are you going to get at $13 million and going to give you 43 and 108?
I mean, do you go after a catcher because you're gonna let Martin go?
You wonder
that Nunez at short. You know, maybe you bring in someone to be an understudy for A-Rod and platoon A-Rod.
I think
third.
I'm telling you, and I don't know. I haven't gone through it as how they're going
to
get him.
They have to stockpile youth. I mean, I know they have some guys that are young that are coming up, but they.
Eduardo Nunez does not have a future with the Yankees because he can't play the field. I really think that. I think you're going to see happen, and you heard it here first. You know who's going to be the starting catcher for the New York Yankees next year, and it kills me to say it's going to be Joe Mauer.
I was just going
to
say that.
Joe Mauer is getting paid so much money on a small market team. He's locked up for a lot of years. He's young. He bounced back from that injury. He hit over 300 this year. I think he led the league in on-base percentage. It was well over 400. He's a great defensive catcher. I think you're going to see Joe Mauer. They're going to put together a package of something, whether it's even I could see Pineda going. Coming off the injury, I could see Pineda's still got a lot of – if you're the Twins and you're saying, how are we going to rebuild? They got no pitching. You're going to say, if you put together a package with Pineda, maybe Granderson, Eduardo Nunez for Joe Mauer, you free up that contract, that money, and then they have, Granderson with $13 million for a year. They could swing that.
Yeah.
Gives them flexibility. I'm telling you, there's not going to be moves they can make free agent-wise because Josh Hamilton is a bad decision.
Yeah,
I think that Joe Mauer is the guy the Yankees have to focus on.
But
I wanted the Mets to get him.
The Yankees have proven time and again that they're willing to overpay. I mean, we're talking about A-Rod, this is a perfect situation. They're overpay over the course of a ridiculous length of a contract just so they can get that one title in the next 2 years.
Right. But now it's starting to come bite them in the end. I mean, go around their lineup. Teixeira is clearly not going anywhere, and he shouldn't. But he's locked up for a lot of years. Obviously, Cano's not going anywhere. Jeter's going to be back. A-Rod's not going anywhere. So even if you bring somebody in a platoon, who are you going to bring in? You can't spend a lot of money on a third baseman in a platoon third baseman, a left-handed hitting third baseman. Who are you going to get?
Yeah.
They don't exist.
Right.
You go through their outfield. I think they're going to bring Ichiro back. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure Bynum's will be back in some capacity. He's not going to be a starting everyday outfielder. They're going to probably – that's why I think it's going to be hard for them to really justify moving Granderson unless they get something really big like Mauer back.
Yeah.
So you look at their team, you look at their starting rotation, there's not a lot of flexibility there. You know, you're going to have CC. They're talking already about bringing Andy back, and I think that's going to be something that's going to happen. Nova and Hughes, they're young. They're not going to trade those guys unless they're in a deal for, a big-time player. But you're not going to let them go. I mean, they're not free agents yet. You got Pineda. What are they going to do with Pineda? I would think you use Pineda as a bargaining chip. These guys coming off Tommy John, they come back better a lot of times. And I think that they use Pineda as a bargaining chip. Some other pieces, and they go out and make a splash in the trade market as opposed to possibly doing something with A-Rod that's not going to happen or signing Josh Hamilton.
Yeah, and that was the just to briefly touch on the Mets, that was the case for Mike Pelfrey,
mm-hmm.
that he's going to come back and he's going to be better than ever because he's coming off the Tommy John, and that he could be a huge chip deal that you could deal. I mean, I don't know. I mean, his last good year was what, 2010, I think?
2010, yeah, he had a good year. 2011, he reverted back. It was very bad. And then this year, he was hurt. I think you're going to see Mike Pelfrey in the starting rotation for the Mets this year. I really do. I mean, he came off an arbitration year, so the Mets don't control him. I mean, they control him in that, he's arbitration eligible, but they don't have him under contract. You know what I mean? So I don't think they're going to trade him. I think that's a guy they can keep because – if they go back to arbitration with him, they could either let him go or they could try to sign him. I mean, I don't know how he would win an arbitration battle coming off Tommy John.
They said this morning that they're not going to arbitration.
They're not going. I don't know how it would even work. I don't know how arbitration, basically you're saying what an independent arbitrator says what this guy's worth on the open market. How do you evaluate a guy who's been out a year?
Yeah.
Coming off surgery. I don't know. So I don't know that he would even – I don't know how arbitration would work for him.
How do you get that job?
You got to get it. I don't know. Hopefully it has something to do with being on the Family Feud at one point, and that leads to arbitrator. I don't know.
Just straight getting 44-point answers.
So I do. If you were to guess, how long would you say an average hot dog?
I would have gone with 8, but I would have been...
You would have had whatever, how many points Kyle got.
I would have been passing on 20 Gs.
Yeah, he would have been 23 Gs. But yeah, so... So, yeah, I mean, you know, we spent this whole time, we were going to talk about the series, but I think we'll talk about the Tigers when we give our little World Series preview. But the Yankees, you know, there's clearly panic mode setting in with, like, the fan base. From the stuff you get from Cashman, he doesn't seem to be that panicked, like they need to make a huge move. But they said the same thing last year, and then they made that big trade for Pineda, which at the time everybody loved, and it was a great trade to make. I think you're going to see that again. I'm telling you. I would put the chances of Joe Mauer being a Yankee next year at around 40%. That's how confident I am. I mean, it's a decent possibility that Joe Mauer is the guy they get because he's under contract for a lot of years. Although he's the hometown boy, and I know everybody's like, there's no way he's going to leave Minnesota, and he has a no-trade clause in there. And I know him and, you know, Moreno are best friends, but, you know, my opinion on best friends on a baseball team. After you're 12 years old, you no longer have a best friend.
Yeah.
All right? You know, after you come down from the tree fort, you don't have a best friend anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the bunk beds have to come apart at some point.
Yeah. Once you're old enough to cheat on your buddy's girlfriend and that happens, you're not, you know, best friends go out the window.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm telling you, I think that's going to happen. But let's transition over to the National League. And really, the story of these playoffs have been the San Francisco Giants. I mean, they're 6-0 in elimination games. I don't know. That's got to be a record for one playoff series. To win 6 elimination games, you can't win any more through the first two rounds.
Yeah, and they were playing a team that was really good in elimination games. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals were, I think they were 4-5-0. So
now I was in a pool. You pick names out of a hat, get a team, and I got the Giants. And I was not happy with it.
Yeah.
I was looking to move them. And they're down. And I had picked Reds Tigers World Series.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I'm not even going to win the first round. They're down 2-0 at home going to Cincinnati. They ain't going to win in Cincinnati. That ballpark, that line is not going to win. And they go out and rattle off 3 in a row. You know, it's just an amazing story. And really, the feel-good story, and I'm sure it's been echoed a million times, but the Barry Zito story of Game 5 there was just amazing. I mean, this guy was a guy who was literally he was going to go down as a punchline in baseball history as worst contract ever. You know, they gave him $126 million contract, whatever it was, and he left off the World Series roster when they won the World Series.
Firing 81-mile-per-hour fastballs.
This guy just never hit the middle of the plate.
Yeah.
Everything. He had 4 or 5 strikeouts with fastballs up. It just goes to show you. It's almost like everything all right here. I think we're under attack. Holy jeez. That's a first. There we go. We got our producer in town. At least we got him back in studio here. But so, we got...
you guys threw everybody off.
Nobody knew what was going on.
I thought like Twitter came alive and it was a flock of Twitter birds were coming in.
I thought Donald Trump had another huge announcement. Yeah. And it was coming over the airwaves. It was an emergency broadcast system.
We interrupt this broadcast.
$6 million. So, but, you know, Barry Zito, it shows you about, you know, stuff, and it's so much more about location than anything else. You know, an 84-mile-an-hour fastball at the letters, it looks like the most hittable pitch in the world. But if you're sitting there nibbling with breaking balls and changeups, that's enough. A pitch at your chin is a hard pitch to hit anytime.
Yeah, I mean, look at Jamie Moyer. The guy was throwing, like, you know, 80. High school sophomore-type stuff. But the location is so huge, and the ability to change speeds, it throws a hitter off. And
when you're throwing that slow, it expands the strike zone, clearly. And their approach, the Reds' approach was, I mean, the Cardinals' approach was atrocious, which was bad because they had, you know, they're a veteran team, but they can't, what they decide, you know, not being disciplined against Zito, a guy who has had control problems. And I think that, you know, I don't think it's really control problems when you see him walking guys. It's because he knows he can't throw a pitch over the plate. He has to be so precise that he's missing that. I mean, you know, it's not like he doesn't have good control. If he wanted to throw strikes, he could throw strikes. Mm-hmm. But he knows you ain't going to groove an 84-mile-an-hour fastball.
Right.
So everything he has to live on the black. So you really, if you're patient enough with him, he's going to have to come at you.
Right.
And they weren't patient enough with him. You know, I really believe that. You know, they were more patient. They could have done it. But it was one of those stories where I'm watching as a guy who's got now money invested in the Giants. It was one of those, like, you know, memorable moments postseason history for me, really.
Yeah.
Like a redemption for a guy.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a bad guy. He never was that guy that bitched. You never heard him say a boo when he got left off the playoff roster. This is a guy who's a Cy Young Award winner.
Yeah.
Never got said boo when he got left off the playoff roster. So I feel great for him. I don't know how you can't like that guy, you know, and root for him.
He has, like, a shady dating history. So I don't know.
What's shady in history? What's shady about it?
What's that?
He's a
So it's just, you know, a lot of women that, you know, bad intentions.
He's bad, or these girls?
The girls are bad intent. They have bad intentions. They corrupt and bury.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Like Eva Longoria?
Yeah.
And Sanchez?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. They get you all locked up. They get in your head. Women, man. I don't know.
Broads.
What can you do with them?
You know?
Dames.
Darn. But, you know, you look at that series, man. I mean, the Cardinals seemed like this was their year, obviously, after the first series and the things that happened there. And then, well, the playing game to begin with. But, you know, and Beltran just being unbelievable throughout the playoffs. And, man, I'll tell you, that game seven was just, I was looking forward to it all day.
I know. I don't know how you come out there and you just lay down an egg like Lowe's did.
It all came down to, so I think that the big turning point was that hit by Kane to put him up 2-0.
Yeah.
Give up a hit to the opposing pitcher with two outs, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was a seed up the middle.
Yeah.
To make it 2-0. And then that broken bat where you see Cuspin go the wrong direction. Yeah. I mean, it goes the wrong direction on the ball because he saw the bat,
yeah,
you know, leaving. And so, you know, it just really, it all came together for him. Now, going into the World Series, what are you looking at? I mean, I see picks across the board here. I think it's a clear-cut team who's going to win this World Series, but who do you think and why do you think that team's going to win?
I think you can chalk the Tigers up for two wins, you know, strictly based on the fact that Verlander is going to get...
At least two. Yeah.
So Tigers are going to get two wins. I think it's going to go at least six. Possibly seven, and I think the Giants are going to work their magic again. I mean, their pitching was outstanding against the Cardinals. You look at the Cardinals pitchers during that series, and they were just awful.
Yeah.
And the Giants seem to have the pitching on their side. And they were talking about it on, I think it was Baseball Tonight, but the situational hitting. Giants have that ability to manufacture runs,
yeah,
that the Mets were doing the first half of the season, where, mm-hmm, it was a lot of hit and run. A lot of, you know, small ball, if you will.
Yeah.
And I think if they can continue to do that, and the big key to tonight's game one, is, you know, can you just make Verlander work, fight off pitches, and stay in the game until you get to the bullpen, then you have a shot.
I agree with you to the point, especially game one, because it's a National League game. Because if you stay in the game, you're going to get to the point in the late innings where his spot's going to come up in the lineup, which doesn't happen in the American League. That's why you,
yeah,
see a lot more complete games in the American League. His spot, if it's 2-2 in the eighth inning, you got a runner on second base, you know, with one out, you're going to have to pinch hit for him. I don't care. And he's a guy that can give you 120 pitches. And I agree with you there. If they can hang around, and especially in this first game, I think he's probably going to pitch game 4 or 5, whatever it'll be. The second time around, it'll be a different story. But this is their chance here. Now, to your point about their situational hitting, I completely agree with you. They got guys that are, you know, like Scudero, like Pagan, that are, you know, table setter guys that hit the way you saw. I mean, Scudero's hit and run in game seven was just as textbook as it could be. Runner,
yeah,
going,
yeah,
oh, slide on the other part of the plate, yeah, I'll just go the other way with,
yeah,
it. It was like you're doing batting practice. The problem I have with it is you have to execute so well.
Right.
And they didn't do that earlier in that series, and that's,
yeah,
why they were down. They had runners in scoring position in a lot of innings in those first four games, and they weren't driving them in. When you play that kind of game, it's such a fine line where you get you got a guy on third base with less than two outs. Okay, get him in. You know, a success rate of 55-60% is very good. They were doing it very well late in that series. Can they keep that up? It's such a fine line. I really think that Detroit's going to win this series in 5 or 6 games. I really do.
Yeah.
And most people I've seen have actually like the Giants. And Mad Dog today was saying he thinks the Giants are going to win. It's going to be an easy series. He says it'll be 5-6 games for the Giants, but it'll be an easy 5 or 6 games,
yeah,
and they're going to have the control of the series. I really don't see that, man. I mean, I think that the Tigers' starting pitching staff is underrated to a point, like all season long. You know, look at the arms they could throw out at you there. You know, I've seen Fister. You saw Fister in the second half of last year. He didn't come out great at the beginning of the year, but he had some big games in that second half.
Yeah.
You know, Scherzer is a stud. We talked about that trade on our Facebook page for a little while about how that worked out for the Tigers. It worked out great. I mean, Scherzer is a legit top of the rotation 2 or 3 pitcher on a great anywhere. And so you got him up there. Their bullpen is their biggest problem. I think the one way that they're going to win, like you said, stay in games, hang around to the seventh or eighth inning and come up with big hits. And I just wonder how many times they can go to that well after going 6-0 in these elimination games. Are they going to always get that big hit in the eighth inning against, you know, a Phil Koch or whatever it is? Is Papa Grande going to come back in and be fat and mess up a game? I don't know.
Yeah.
We know he'll be fat.
Yeah. He didn't get. Yeah, he didn't get. He didn't do a juice cleanse.
So no. No, he did not go with the crash juice cleanse. No, the cayenne pepper diet. I didn't see Papa Grande doing that one. So is that going to be the case? But I think it's going to be actually a very entertaining series. I know Major League Baseball was not hoping for the coveted Detroit San Fran
matchup. You wonder if people are still bitter about the Harbaugh Schwartz incident last
year. Yeah, the handshake.
Some carryover from that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Although I will take Detroit in a fight over San Francisco.
Yeah.
100 times
100%.
Out of 100. I told you, Detroit's my favorite city in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Starting with, and I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but when they had that Thanksgiving game last year.
Yeah.
And it was a big, you know, they always play on Thanksgiving, but the halftime show is going to be Nickelback. They started a petition. They got like 20,000 signatures saying not to let Nickelback into their stadium. And I mean, anybody that likes Nickelback is an idiot.
Yeah.
And a horrible person. So I right away, I was like, that's awesome. That's a great job by the Detroit fans. I started loving them. I love them even more. I know Skippy, who has called into the show. He's been a huge fan. Skip now is from Detroit area. You know, God bless him. I mean, I'm pulling for Detroit not only because I picked them. I just think that it's
Well, you know, they want to open up a zombie. They want to open up a zombie amusement park in Detroit. So not only is there just crime everywhere, no cops. They also want to open it up. Just keep Detroit exactly as is, and just have zombies roam around. And people can pay to see them.
They'll just be zombies in a random like merry-go-round. Like, go ahead, I dare you to go on that.
Yeah.
And it's just like creepy dolls hanging from it.
Like just a bunch of carny dogs.
They're just turning their sound into a horror movie.
Yeah.
Once you walk in, it's just like little kids running around on a bike.
It literally is going to be RoboCop. Like he's going to come out of nowhere and just take control of the situation. We have a James Tita update.
Yeah?
Flash update.
Yeah.
Kung Fu Panda went yard.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Well, a missile.
I love this guy.
It looked like it was only like 10 feet off the ground.
I'll tell you, Kung Fu Panda. And like we talked about last week, he came in this season last year and he had lost his weight. And everybody was all excited about Kung Fu Panda. And, you know, he did okay and, you know, got some injuries and this and that. He's back to being just fat.
Yeah.
Kung Fu Panda packs a huge lip, which I love.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard when you're that fat to see a lipper of dip in your mouth through all that fat. That's a shoehorn half a tin dip he's got in at all moments, and I love that guy.
I've kind of been obsessed with for this series is Hunter Pence.
Yeah,
is one of the most insane looking psychotic weirdos in baseball.
He's got that creepy like blonde beard, like
the way he like runs and the way
everything
he throws
around,
and the way he bats and the way he just like they
he's like just like Shoeless Joe Jackson. He's like a throwback from the team.
They were like the place was going nuts the other night. The place is going nuts. They're panning across the stadium. There are fans like losing their minds, and then they cut to Hunter Pence and he's just got this intense stare directly into the camera.
Yeah,
he's got it chilled me to the bone.
You know what I actually think? So Hunter Pence is got one more year arbitration, which I think that you know they'll take him. Then it becomes a free agent. I mean, I know the Mets don't spend money, but in 2 years he'll be a free agent, right? 2014 he's gonna be a free agent. He is a guy the Mets need to go out and get. And I know he hasn't been clutch. He's been bad in this postseason.
Yeah.
You know? And he wasn't good for San Fran down the stretch. But I think that I mean that's the type of guy when you talk about money, and you're not gonna need to spend a ridiculous amount of money on him. You know, you're not going to need to spend 20 a year on him. You can get him for 12 to 15 a year. Sign him to a 5-for-$70 million contract.
Absurd.
5-for-$70?
Why would you do that?
He's a multiple all-star. Look at his career stats, dude. Look at the seasons he's had. Look at the seasons he had. 314, 308, 324.
Yeah, but these numbers are not...
I just rattled off consecutive seasons.
Weren't we just talking about how David Wright might get $15 million a year, and you're going to give this guy $15
million? I think David Wright gets $20
million a year.
Yeah, and I think he's going to get around 50. He'll get $15 million. I'm sure of that. He's getting $12 million right now.
Yeah, go to him. You got 10 last year.
Yeah, scroll down. He's got 10 last year, and that's through arbitration, I think.
10, yeah.
I don't know. So he got 10-4. This guy's going to be...
He's going to be 30. I don't know.
I'm telling you, that's a guy I'd like
that's
to go
bad.
See.
You would offer them that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we can offer him something other than money, like, you know, dead babies or something. He seems like he'd be into that. The guy is a psycho.
So he's going to be in Detroit. You're saying he's going to be in Detroit.
He's
going to Zombieland up
he's
there?
He's going to clean up the Detroit Motown.
He's just going to roam the streets
at
night.
With zombies.
You're going to see him on the top of a building. Just
killing zombies.
Flying, just dogs all around
him. Dogs.
I will kill every dog. That'll be my mission. And I'll hit 324. But I think it's going to be a good series. I do think, you know, you're going to see battle because you're going to have good pitching, you know. Delman Young in the playoffs is just, he's the anti-Yankee. I mean, this is a guy that just steps up in the playoffs.
They were saying he was like the worst ALCS MVP in the history of baseball.
Swinging a Tucci Lumber bat.
Swinging a Tucci Lumber, man. I love that. I mean, and he hit a couple home runs in that series that were just lying shots, like the one we just saw from your boy Kung Fu Panda. It's just absolutely fantastic. So I think it's going to be a very good series. Now, let's transition over to the NFL. And, you know, I think we should start with the Giants. We talked about the game coming in. You were so pessimistic. You know what I decided on my drive home today?
I want to interrupt you for a second. I apologize for interrupting you. But pessimistic,
I'm
I don't know.
I'm a Family Feud winner.
You don't
I
do that.
I just tried to manage for you.
I won 5 large. Okay?
4. Split 5 ways. Okay, yes.
I can buy you a lifetime Metro North pass out of here. So
that's a lot of road soda.
Pessimistic.
That's a lot of Fosters on the
I'm
train.
Very cautionary about the Giants, especially given their history against
which
the
is
Red
very
Giants.
Anti-Giant fan-like, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but RG, and we said this last week, but RG3 he's the real deal. I think he's better than Cam Newton was last year, and he doesn't have all the other hang-ups and emotional baggage that now everyone's calling him Sham Newton, which is crazy, but.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Eli just has a hang-up with the Redskins sometimes where he just sees the red and yellow and he decides that he has to throw towards it. But I'm cautionary because if you look at the Giants, we've mentioned this before, if you look at the Giants in the first half of the season,
yeah.
they always do well. They always look like they have a 5-2.
That's the Tom Coughlin.
6-2.
Bugaboo.
And then they just absolutely go into a spiral, tailspin in the second half of the season. So, you know. It felt like a trap game, and they got down early, and you know Eli was not playing his best.
He's playing bad.
He's playing bad. Yeah, they were really
the anti Romo.
Really, yeah, and but the funny thing is when he threw that pass to go up with like a minute 3 left, I turned to my friend who's a Skins fan. I said, "You left way too much time on the clock. Way too much time." Yeah. A minute and a half with 3 timeouts. I mean, you might as well play another game.
Yeah, it's true. And it doesn't get any less amazing how the Giants do it. It really doesn't. That it's and we talked about it week one when they lost to the Cowboys. You get a sense, and not being a Giant fan, but not being a Giant hater, like I'm not, you know, I'm looking at them and I'm like, they're going to win this game. You know, and that's how it was this week.
What do you guys think about it? I watched that game the other day. It was over at a friend's house. All Giant fans. The play calling towards the end of the game. I mean, they're up. They're winning. They're throwing balls at first down. They're throwing like 5 yards. Like, why aren't they running the ball? Who's calling those plays?
Yeah. Kevin Gilbreth.
What is going on? And even if we're all sitting there like, why are they throwing the ball right now? And then you hear the announcers, another throw. Like, they're like,
well,
another pass play by the Giants. What are these? I'm like, what?
You know
what?
We talked about it, about why they aren't running the ball. You know, they've had success on the ground this year. It's amazing. But I'm not gonna criticize Kevin Gilbert.
Yeah.
I'm just not gonna do it.
Yeah.
Because that guy, I mean, I think that is part of their strategy going in. Okay, we got this quarterback. We're gonna ride or die with him, and we're gonna throw the ball, and that's gonna be our thing. And we're just gonna keep our foot on the gas type thing. We have these playmakers, and I can't question it. I mean, you could nitpick plays here, like you said. You know, why didn't they run the ball here or anything? Like that. But you just take a step back and you look at what Kevin Gilbert has done. It's amazing. And I put it, you know. Eli Manning's been great. They got ridiculous playmakers on the outside. They got running backs. They got, you know, Ahmad Bradshaw and Waterworks. They got guys that can make plays.
Bennett, you know, Bennett's a guy.
He had a couple great catches. Yeah. He had a couple catches that were like really only a black unicorn catch. It's like, you know, anybody that doubted they existed, they exist. We saw it.
Yeah, and I think that the Redskins suffered with London Fletcher getting hurt. I mean, that's a guy that has like one of the longest consecutive game streaks in the
We talked about him. He's one of our guys. He's one of the Tri-State Sports Guys guys.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, like Phil Simms, like Iron Man.
Yeah, well, he was on my list of guys that aren't going to make the Hall of Fame that should make the Hall of Fame. And you actually said you think he will make the Hall of Fame.
I don't see how he can. I mean, he's constantly in the top 3 to 5 players his entire career in tackles.
Yeah. I just think it's going to come down to, you know, they only allowed 5 players in a year, and that he was never, you know, he never had the aura of a Ray Lewis or one of those guys, or even a Harrison. He's better than Harrison.
Yeah.
His career's much better than him.
Yeah.
But you're going to remember, guys, 10 years from now, I remember Harrison more over London Fletcher, even though London Fletcher's been a much better player.
Well, one of the guys that I wanted to put on my list last week when we had the top legendary players, quote unquote, that don't have legendary numbers was Harry Carson for the Giants. And for some reason, I don't understand how this is possible, but the NFL didn't keep tackle stats.
Oh, yeah, they didn't mess with them. They didn't have time for that.
Until, yeah. How do you not keep tackles?
Yeah, they didn't keep stats. I mean, sacks until like the late 80s. But yeah, tackles, they didn't mess with those guys.
Yeah. So, I mean.
That's a meaningless stat.
I don't have the stats on Harry Carson's tackles, but if you
just know that he played football.
I just know he played football for an extensive period of time, and he was a captain, and he used to give Gatorade showers, and he once caught a touchdown pass.
Yeah, you know those stats.
But they had, like, interceptions, and they had, like, sacks, and they had fumbled, but they didn't have tackles. So I have no idea if Harry Carson should be a Hall of Famer. I mean, he is, but getting back to the game, though, the thing that I like about this year's Giants versus last year's is that they have that – there's no longer that doubt. There was a little bit of doubt last year about what kind of team we were putting together and whether or not, you know, they had what it took to win. Like, did they have the same chemistry as 2007? Because last year it was you know – what kind of team were we dealing with? There wasn't really an identity for the team, you know? You know, it used to be, okay, we're going to pound the ball with 2 running backs, you know, platoon them, and then we can have some play action, and, you know, Eli can start. I mean, that was the beginning of Eli's fourth quarter comeback string was last year. I mean, he did it a couple times prior to that, but that last year was when he was setting records with that.
Yeah.
And so my concern this year was, like, I don't want to fall into that habit of, like, oh, well, we can get down and play like crap for 3 quarters and then come back in the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just good to see that they're now coming out of the gate and playing considerably well throughout, you know, the entire game as opposed to just turning it on last minute.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with anything you're saying. You know, you look at the Giants. They played that, like, no respect card a little too much, I thought, early in the season. And the Jets get all the attention. We don't get any attention. They played that card a little bit too much. Like, the Jets were getting attention, but not for any of the good reasons.
Yeah.
So don't give me that. You know, it's not like the media was like loving the Jets. It was almost like a laughable, like we're going to laugh at the Jets.
Yeah.
You know, and so they played that card a little bit too much. And now, you know, and so it did sort of allow them to fly under the radar. But what really allowed them to fly under the radar was last year they were 9-17 that got hot and caught break.
Right.
I think they have improved from last year. I think the question marks going into the season, you had mentioned the offensive line. The offensive line's been unbelievable. I would be willing to put their offensive line against any offensive line in football. You look at, I mean, Eli Manning's jersey at the end of the game looks like the jersey it was when he ran out into the field.
Yeah.
And he's been that kind of guy. I mean, you know, he's tough and all, so it's not like he's going to come out of the field, but he's not a guy that really can throw under pressure, I don't think. But if you give him time – and you give these receivers time, they get separation, they're going to get separation every time. So you look at that, that was a question mark. Their defensive line, and they had some, you know, issues with their back end, you know, the rotation, back end of the rotation on their defensive line. Their defensive line started out very poorly. They're starting to come on some, but I think that...
And they got Canty back.
They got Canty back, but I think the threat of their defensive line never went away, which means that teams... Like, you know, all defense line were all frustrated. They couldn't get their five, you know, couldn't get to them because nobody was going 5-step drop. Well, that catches up on offenses. You can't. There's a reason why teams don't go 3-step drop all game.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to put up big numbers when you do that. So the threat of their defensive line was always there. I don't see how you can't put the Giants up with any other team in the NFC. That all being said, if they had lost that game, they would have been in big trouble because they would have been 0-3 in the division. You know, they've only been a half a game up in the division. When going 0-3 means you're going to lose all your tiebreakers. You know, the best you could do is 3-3 there. So it's a huge game for them. How the hell the Redskins don't have a safety over the top?
They quoted Kyle Shanahan as saying that they doubled him on that play, on that deep play.
Well, he's the best wide receiver of all time.
Well, this is what's getting
wide open.
And I hate to say this. I sound like a broken record, but how is he doing this? Because I watched Calvin Johnson Monday night.
I did too.
And they didn't double him as much as I thought they did. They kind of left Tillman on an island with him, and you saw what happened. Megatron didn't really have that great a game. He had a couple drop passes, but
he had a horrible game.
Yeah. And so you look at a guy like Cruz, and you got to figure defenses are definitely game planning for this guy. They're definitely shifting the coverage to him, and he's still finding openings and making catches and getting yak, which is so invaluable. It's unbelievable.
It really is, yeah. I mean, he is just one of those guys. I mean, but that goes back to the front office, the Giants, finding this guy. You know, when everybody talks about he came out of nowhere, you know what? The Giants are the ones that found him. And if you remember, with the first
the Jets. Practice squad.
Well, right? He torched the Jets in his first preseason game against them. That was on Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
You know, remember when it happened, he put up 200 yards and you saw Rex Ryan go over the coffin. He's like, man, that guy Cruz is going to be a player. And he said, yeah, he's talented, you know. He might have been on the Jets practice. I hadn't heard that, but, I'm not.
Either he was on it or he was going to be on it if the Giants cut him.
Yeah, maybe they gave him a tryout or something. Yeah. I mean,
but here's the thing with Cruz, too. He's going to be a free agent.
Yeah.
A restricted free agent. They're paying him around $500K this season, and he's gonna hit the lotto.
Well,
the Giants historically have been a team where they, if you come at them too high, they're like, peace out.
Yeah.
They did it to Steve Smith, they did it to Kevin Boss, but this is a different kind of ball player. One that, you know, you can say Eli makes receivers. He's not making Cruz. He's making Dipper the Cruz, and Cruz is making plays.
100%.
So I don't know that you. I mean, I say I'm not the kind of guy that says break the bank. You got to break the bank with this.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up today. Francesca was talking about, somebody called up and said, "How much? What do you think he's going to get? Are they? You know, they all they have to do, like you say, is restricted free agent. All they have to do is match whatever other offer somebody gives them. Now he's going to get a big offer. Now he was going through some of the wide receivers in the league and what they're getting paid, or some of the free agents, like, you know, Brandon Marshall's getting 9.5. He just signed a free agent. He's getting 9.5 a year. I mean, the Megatron deal is crazy. But he's getting 9.5 this year in his first year of the deal. You know, Vincent Jackson's like 9.2. The Jets signed that stupid deal with Santonio. And he's getting, I think, 8 or 7.8 or something like that this year. But he got 10 in his first year. And so Francesca says, I could see him getting 5 for 50. I think you're going to have to pay that guy more than 5 for 50.
Yeah.
I really think you're going to have to give him 50 guaranteed.
Yeah.
I really think that. Because if you're going to let that guy go be a free agent and you're going to say, okay, he's unrestricted, but we're going to have to match something. Some team's going to give him way more than that. So if the Giants are going to get him, they're not going to get him for 5 for 50.
Well, and plus, they were saying at his age and over the span that he's had the past 2 years, tops in history, NFL history.
Yeah.
No one's had the numbers that he's had of his span.
I could see that.
So whereas, you know, coming into the season, we thought, is Cruz a fluke? Is now that he's the number one, are people going to be headhunting? Is he going to be able to take that weight on his shoulders? Yeah, he's been able to do it, and he's been able to excel. So...
Who else would you say is a more explosive wide receiver in the league? I mean, you're going to talk about Megatron. He's a different type of wide receiver. He's big, can't cover him, and he is explosive and fast and all. I mean, I think he's Steve Smith from the Panthers in his prime.
I was literally going to say Steve Smith.
Yeah.
Or to a certain extent, to a lesser extent, DeSean Jackson, because those are two guys that, you know, if you give them just a little bit of an opening, they can take it to the house.
Yeah. Yeah, DeSean Jackson to me is more of a Percy Harvin than, like, yeah, he'll make a couple big plays, but he'll disappear.
Right.
Victor Cruz never disappears for a game. You know, so, I mean, I think, that play to end that game, you know, to take the lead in that game last week was similar in impact and similar in the type of play it was to the 99-yard touchdown against the Jets, where it was like they needed something.
And the big play against the Cowboys.
Right, exactly.
Another big one against the Cowboys. And it's so weird to see a Giants receiver pull away while running down the field. It's jarring because I don't know how to respond.
Once that ball left his hands, you said, well, he's going to have him.
Yeah.
And they run that like seam play down the middle of the field, and it's just amazing. Now, going into this week, I'm sure you're going to give me a pessimistic thing.
Guaranteed W.
Is that right?
I'm going to go flip mode on this one. Guaranteed W, and I know it's going to come back to bite me, but guaranteed W.
I'm in the same boat as you. Now, what's interesting is I don't know what the spread is now. It opened up at +2 for the Giants.
Oh, no, it was Cowboys 2, and then it swung to the Giants.
Oh, I'm saying the Jets, Giants opened +2. They were getting 2 points to open, which I'm sure just the Vegas flooded, the bettors flooded that. Because since game one, the Cowboys have done nothing. nothing. I mean, they've won some games, but they've, you know, last week they didn't look great. They played well against the Ravens and lost, you know, on that missed kick and terrible play call management down the stretch there. But I'm not a big believer in the Ravens anymore anyway. If I haven't seen them this year, I think that they're not.
You can't lose two guys like they lost.
Exactly.
And expect to still perform.
So don't give me them. So I agree with you. I think this is going to be. And it's a game that the Giants still know they need to win. They can't fall to 1-3 in the division.
Right.
They can't lose to the Cowboys. They never lose in Dallas.
In the new stadium, they don't.
Yeah. They haven't lost, right? They never lost there.
But this is what I was saying after week one, was all these Dallas fans and the Cowboys were really happy with themselves, not knowing that they had Justin friggin' Tryon.
Yeah,
on Ogletree,
who's never done anything.
Who hasn't done anything since?
Yeah, he was the big fantasy free agent pickup. Yeah.
They've now lost Sean Lee for the season, who was an absolute thorn in the Giants' side. Lee would always come up with a pick, or a fumble return,
playmaker at linebacker, 100%.
Turn the tide, and DeMarco Murray is probably not going to play. And DeMarco Murray is also he was a Giants killer.
Yeah, he was huge in that game.
So now you have this guy, Philip Tanner, and you know, knowing my freaking luck, the guarantee to win, he'll probably come out and run for 200 yards, but it'll be his coming out party. But I just strongly feel that, you know, we have the momentum. The Cowboys are coming off a pretty lackluster win against the Panthers. The Panthers almost came back and won that game.
Yeah.
And
the Panthers stink.
Combine that with the injuries. And the fact that the Giants are getting back to 100% in terms of health, you know. And I meant to say this before, but Stevie Brown is my new favorite Giant.
Yeah?
This guy, Phillips goes down, he comes in, and he has something like 3 or 4 picks.
Yeah.
He had a pick in the game against Washington. He had a fumble recovery. The guy's just a ball hawk.
Yeah.
And that was what Kenny Phillips was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Everyone was coming out of college, we're like, he's a ball hawk. He's exactly what the Giants need.
Yeah.
And when him and Roll were together, they're like ball hawks. And I'm like, you know, Kenny hasn't really done too much to prove that, to earn that moniker. And Stevie Brown seems to have his hand on the ball every game.
He's doing it now. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the only thing you got to worry about in this game is when Romo's on, he can be as unstoppable as any quarterback. He's got that moxie to him, and he's got that ability. I mean, he hasn't done it for a few weeks now where he's been the Tony Romo that's unstoppable. So I do, you know, and will, you know, some of these wide receivers step up for them?
Yeah, is Dez Bryant going to turn it on all of a sudden?
And you never know. He can. He's almost like a DeSean Jackson where, like, you know, he disappears completely, and then you see him, and you're like, oh, yeah, that guy's got more talent than anybody in the league.
Yeah.
So you worry about that. You worry about Eli – you know, having another game like he had last week. And
now he's had two straight games now where that have been iffy. I mean, he wasn't exactly, throwing out aces against the 49ers.
But actually, he was terrible, too. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't good. So for 180 yards on, 30-something.
So it could be that he's due. So
yeah, no, it could be that he's due for, you know, to not be able to be in a position to come back in the fourth quarter. But I agree with you, though. I think this is a 7-point win for the Giants. I do. I just think that the Cowboys are pretenders. That was a team I was completely wrong on. I was higher on the Cowboys than a lot of other people were, and I think I'm wrong. I haven't watched them now. You know, even in that game that they won against the Giants, they weren't great. I mean, DeMarco Murray just made some amazing runs where he was bottled up, ran, you know, crazy all down the sideline. And Ogletree,
Two or three broken plays on the defensive side of the ball for the Giants.
Yeah.
Two or three broken plays.
And a fifth string cornerback covering a no-name guy. You would think they could handle it, and he just couldn't. It was two no-name guys, and one no-name outplay the other no-name.
Yeah.
And you'll never hear from either one of them again.
Yeah.
So let's transition over to the Jets. I predicted that the Jets wouldn't really even be in this game that much.
Well, you said double digits.
Said double digits.
Yeah.
I said – I just didn't –
Spread was 11, right?
Spread was 11.5 is where I closed that. Yeah, 11.5. I wound up taking the Jets at the end and winning that. But, the Jets, to be honest with you, and you could tell me your opinion on it, the Jets dominated that game. They won. They should have won that game.
And if you're a Jets fan and you're happy coming away from that game, you need to punch yourself in the balls.
100%.
That's not a moral victory. That's you blew a victory.
100%.
You blew a win. You had them right where you wanted them.
You don't have moral victories this late in the season.
Yeah, and I mean, that was a game that to go into New England and to win that game would have been huge. Because you look at the spread, you look at what everyone was saying, and it's like the Jets didn't have a chance in the world, and they were punch for punch, and if it weren't for I mean, this is one of the few Jets games I caught pretty much whistle-to-whistle. And if I'm Mark Sanchez, I need to have, like, a little frustration room set up somewhere, like, on the side of the field, where like, a punching bag or something, because there are so many drop passes. So 100%. Many drop passes.
100%. And more so, plays that don't go down is drops because they're tough catches.
Yeah.
But that the Giants make that
make
catch.
Plays.
And the Pats make that catch. And you watch them, and it's like, you know, the takeaway from the game is going to be going to come down to a couple plays. It's going to come down to Sanchez's pick, which was awful. Once it left his hand, you can't look that long the other side of the field and then come across and float a ball like he did. If he had zipped it in there, he was open. There was a seam there.
Yeah.
But you knew right when he left his hand, I said, this is not going to be good.
And this is why I'm kind of wishy-washy on Sanchez, because it's plays like that where I'm like, he's not going to be a next-level quarterback, and he can't be a successful quarterback. But at the same time, the only reason that pass happened is because some idiot dropped the ball the play before, and they had to call something like that. Yeah. Or he felt compelled to throw that because the underneath guy that dropped the pass the play before, he doesn't want to go back to him.
But I'll tell you what about Sanchez. I think that he locked up the fact that he's going to be the starter for the rest of the year with that game, because he made that terrible pass, and we saw early in the year against the Steelers, he went in the tank and shrugged his shoulder, and it was just done. Granted, the Patriots' defense is atrocious, and they are, but he wound up taking them down that field in that 93-yard drive, completing 9 of 10 passes for 93 yards, and that was the Sanchez that although his stats weren't great when they were going to back-to-back AFC Championship games, that second year, he led the league in fourth quarter comebacks as a sophomore quarterback, which is amazing. And he did it by doing those type of drives. He always seemed to do enough to get it done, and he did it there. He really, the play that they wound up settling for the field goal to tie the game, he did enough to get him in. He threw a ball right to Stephen Hill, and he dropped it. And I do give Hill credit. You could see how emotional he was about it.
Yeah.
He's not, a diva wide receiver who goes and, he's not Santonio Holmes.
Right.
He you saw him when that kick went through. He was like down on his knees, like praying. Like, I knew I screwed this up, which is something to say. Like maybe this guy can, because he does have ridiculous athletic attributes. But I think that you look at Sanchez, and he did everything he could have done. I mean, the fumble to lose the game, he obviously should have just tucked it there.
Yeah.
But the game was over. He took that sack, they would have had, would have been 3rd and 18 from the 40, or over at 32-yard line. The game was over, but even if he had taken that sack. But he did enough to win that game. To me, the biggest takeaway from this game, and it goes back to show you that stats don't tell the story of a game. Talk about last week with the Jets. Sanchez threw for 82 yards, and I told you, Sanchez played a great game. He did exactly what they asked for him. You look at the defensive statistics for the Jets, you say, well, the Jets' defense played great. Gave up 17 points during the game before overtime, and you're like, okay, they did well. But you watch them, they never get off the field on third down.
Yeah.
Never. Third down, I'm watching the game with my brother-in-law. I'm like, Jim, it'd be 3rd down and 8, it could be 3rd down and 4, third down and 2, whatever it is. They can't get off the field, and then you watch that drive when they take the lead on, they get a gift. And this goes back to the Giants fans, which is one of the things that frustrates me about Giants fans. When I say that the Giants got breaks in that game against the Niners last year, that's not saying that they got completely lucky.
Yeah.
Because they had to capitalize on those breaks.
Exactly.
And that's just something they do. It's the New York Mets in 1986, I'm the biggest Mets fan there. They got lucky that there was a wild pitch thrown to have the tying run, and then a ball went through Bill Buckner's legs. But they capitalized on by winning Game 7. The Giants capitalized on those two turnovers
by the
kick return, by the punt returner. The Jets get that gift, and they brought Tebow in. And I'm saying to myself, this is actually very good. Because they're going to throw the ball here.
Yeah.
I turned to my brother and I said, they're going to throw the ball here. This is why they do it. The under the secrecy of all these. This is it. They got to play here, but they're going to take a shot. Yeah. And if they took a shot there, no Jet fan in the world would be pissed off at that. They took a shot.
Yeah,
it does protect the ball in the red zone. Like
I'm always a fan of as soon as you get that turnover, as soon as you have the momentum, you seize it and you go right for the jugular.
Mm-hmm.
Go right for the end zone. Don't even mess around. And it was weird to see them like run the ball at Tebow. I fully expect them to do play action, like fake that shotgun option or something like that, and step back, and the guy's going to be open.
They have no secondary.
Yeah.
If no secondary, let alone if you were to have a play where you're just faking anything, that little veer option that they run where it's a, you know, he's got the option to keep it or hand to the fullback.
Yeah.
Give that little play, step back and make a play with it. Yeah. And if it's not there, let him run away or, you know, whatever it is. But take a shot there. And once I saw that, I said to him, I'm like, you know, they're going to leave way too much time because they're not going to get a first down and they're going to leave way too much time.
Yeah.
And when Sanchez took that sack and you know, people were still on him that he shouldn't have taken that sack. That actually was a good, and I was all of them like, oh, he's got to throw that ball away. But it actually was a smart play. It made him waste his time out. It didn't mean anything. But so they get that play, they get that field goal, and they have all that time left. And you watch it was like before you looked up, they were in field goal range, the Patriots.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, you're looking at, they got this, you know, got linebackers covering Wes Welker and little things like that. And you're like, you know, this is supposed to be a defensive genius.
Yeah.
And he does put together a good statistical defense. They're always going to be good. They didn't give up a lot of yards against the best offense in the AFC. But it's like, what are you doing there? How are they going to beat you? Let them beat you over the top. Let them beat you over the top. Brandon Lloyd, they brought in Brandon Lloyd to be a big-time playmaker. He stinks. He stinks. Yeah. I'm telling you right now, he stinks.
Killed me last week.
I got him on one of my fantasy teams, man. I'm telling you, the guy stinks. I watch a lot of Patriots games because they're on a lot down here in Connecticut, and he stinks. Let him beat you downtown. And Cromartie has played out of his mind filling in for Revis. Look what we did to Andre Johnson. Look what we did this past week. He's been playing, and I'm not a big Cromartie guy. Well, I think he's a good cornerback, but he's more hyped than anything. But I didn't think he could be that kind of blanket quarter. I knew he's a playmaker, like you said about your safety there. You know, but he's a playmaker, but he's been lights out.
Yeah.
Put him on Lloyd. Wes Welker is not a deep guy. You know what I mean? And if you get beat deep, you get beat deep. But you can't let him just chip down the field.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to work. Because even if they got the toss in overtime, they were going to do nothing better than a field goal and give them a chance to win anyway. So.
So are you one of the Jets fans that's subscribing to this conspiracy theory about the clock operator?
Well, that's 100%. It was shiesty.
Yeah.
I don't think it was – I honestly don't think – it would be amazing if it was – he did that on purpose, to be honest with you. I don't know why somebody didn't have him throw the flag because you could challenge a clock.
Yeah.
I don't know why because, you know, if you watch it, clearly it was messed up. But, you know, him not starting the clock – hurt the pass. So I don't think it was a conspiracy like this clock runner did it on purpose.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was like maybe a full second before he started the clock.
Yeah.
That would have hurt them if he hadn't, you know, because that would have given the Jets a 2-minute warning. You know what I'm saying? So it would have hurt them. So, but I clearly it was messed up. You saw it, right? I mean, clearly more than 6 seconds clicked off the top from when he held, you know, by the time he caught the ball to the time that the Jets recovered it. Way more than 6 seconds. That means nothing as far as the game goes because the Jets had every opportunity to win that game.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could put a lot of it on Rex Ryan, and I do, in that, you know, their whole mindset of how to win that game. And I know he got all defensive about calling, you know, they're saying that they played scared and this and that. But he still has been able to put them in situations to win these games, which you got to give him some credit for. I mean, talent-wise, the Patriots – are such a more talented team than the Jets. Dude, Rex Ryan's got to get credit for that. He's got to get credit. You know, who else gets credit? You know, I don't know. You look at a guy like Jeremy Curley, and I've been relatively high on Jeremy Curley. I do think he could be he's not a number one wide receiver.
Yeah.
He could be, though, I'm telling you, a Santana Moss. He could be a Lavernius Coles for the Jets. You know, they typically have one of those guys.
Yeah.
And he could be that guy. He's super quick. He's the only guy that could be explosive when he catches the ball in his hands. And like I said a few weeks ago, the best thing to happen to the Jets was Santonio Holmes going down. How much better has the team looked in general since he went down?
Yeah, I mean,
it's been night and day.
Losing respectably.
Yeah. But look at him. Yeah, I mean, you look, Sanchez has been way better.
Yeah.
The last two games, Sanchez has been much better. You know, the game against the Texans, they played much better. They were in position to win that game, you know, at time, late in the game there. That's, I'm telling you, it's the Jeremy Shockey, Tiki Barber effect. I'm telling you.
So what's your take on this week? Jets, Finns. I mean,
it's clearly another must-win. It's always tough to sweep a team, especially in your division, especially the Dolphins,
who have just been like winning, not ugly per se, but
I think the Jets are going to win this game. I actually think the Jets. I feel pretty confident, as confident in this game. I feel more confident than I did even against the Colts. I really think, you know, pretty confident in this game. I feel more confident than I was even since they played them the first time. Even though they won ugly the first time, I think that the Jets up front, the defense is playing a little bit better. I think the offensive line is starting to play a little bit better. I think Sanchez is starting to play a little better. I mean, the Dolphins defense is very good. And, you know, Bush is going to have this little chip on his shoulder. But I'm telling you, the defense is going to have a chip on his shoulder about Bush with all this little chippiness he's got going on this week. I think the Jets are going to win this game. I think this is going to be like a 10-point win for the Jets. And I don't even know what the spread is. I'm guessing it's a field goal either way. I don't know. My guess would probably be like 3 points for the Jets. But I'm thinking it's going to be a 10-point win for the Jets. What do you think? We all know it's a must-win, but as an objective, just football fan, looking at this game, I know you can make cases for both, but...
Spread's 2.5.
2.5. I should be a bookie.
I mean, I think that the Jets can take this, you know, even though they should have won, they can take what they were able to accomplish versus the Patriots and kind of apply that and use that to their benefit against the Dolphins. And I think it's going to be, you got to get to the Dolphins early. You got to shake up Tannehill. You got to shake up whatever confidence he has, you know, because the guy's still a rookie.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can just disturb his timing, mess up his rhythm, but especially just stick it to Reggie Bush right off. And I think if you get out to a good lead in the first quarter, they'll be fine. But if they have to go blow for blow the whole game, I think you're going to see it come down to the Dolphins winning at the end on a field goal.
Yeah, I could see. I mean, I understand all the points you made. I just think this is going to be one of those games where the Jets are going to – the Jets have looked good 3 weeks in a row, you know. I think that they're going to go out and make some plays. So
maybe this is Tebow's breakout game.
This could be Tebow mania. Yeah. That's it. Thanks for playing, Sanchez. All right, man. Well, can we do a little daze maybe?
Yeah, why not?
Why not? We got time. What of it?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you might listen to what I just said and say, you know, dude, are you serious? Well, you might say that again about 4 or 5 more times because I got 4 or 5 stories from the interwebs that will blow your brain out of your anus.
Courtesy of Al Gore.
So first story I have up, and this is not really – it's not really weird or crazy. It's more just sad.
Well, that's good. That's what we want to go with.
Yeah, I want to bring it down a little bit. I feel like we're on a high from the Jets, and I feel like we got to bring it down.
We got to put things in perspective, life itself in perspective. Go ahead, Neil. What do you got?
So Terrell Owens, he's got a lot of free time on his hands these days. He went one-on-one with the world's smallest street baller and lost.
Yeah? You can't play a street baller. These guys are good, man.
No, you got to see the guy.
How little is he?
He's a little person.
He's an LP.
He's fun size?
Yeah. Like, crossing over and...
He's just killing
him? His name's Ja, quote-unquote, Manny Love Swanson.
Yeah, of course he is. Of course it's his name.
He's got a... I mean, I looked at him. He's like... He's bigger than Mini-Me, but he's smaller than probably Gary Coleman. He's like in the...
He's not smaller than Gary Coleman. Hit play on this thing. While you're talking, let me watch it at least. All right, so he...
We're going to watch an ad.
We're going to watch an ad.
You got to trust me. The dude's small.
Yeah. Well, I got to check this out. We got to post this on our site. Has it been on our site yet?
No, I didn't. I saw it the other day. I didn't put it on yet.
So that's things are really not going well for TL.
Yeah. And Ocho. I mean, it's just wow.
Yeah.
How quick it turns. I mean, these guys, you know, we were all like knocking on them for being hot dogs or whatever.
Who would have thought?
4'5".
At 4'5".
So he's smaller than Snooki. I'm sorry.
He's smaller than Snooki.
Snooki's 4'10", I think, but I don't even know if she's 4'10". But I don't know how one-on-one you lose to a guy like that.
You would think.
I mean,
the abs alone would be some sort of...
Like, this guy must have the most ridiculous fadeaway in the history of, you know...
His score.
Yeah. So, T.O., man...
Who would think out of the diva wide receivers that Randy Moss is the one doing by far the best? Like, look at this dude.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's pretty legit.
He went through his legs, though.
I feel like these guys are playing like they're playing against a kid. That's a pretty sweet
move. This is a little bit like the Washington Generals defense.
Yeah. He hits jump shots from...
I'm not saying he won't beat me.
Yeah. But you got to feel like some of these guys take it a little easy on him because...
He's not 4'5".
Yeah, he looks like he's 3'5".
Yeah, he ain't 4'5". That's like the dude patting his stats like, I'm 4'5", though. All right, what else you got?
So sticking with basketball, Irvin, quote-unquote, Magic Johnson is being sued by a former employee who says that she often had him squeeze his red vines. Now, to me,
I don't even know what that means.
At first, I'm like, wow.
I feel old. Like, I don't...
As soon as I read something, I automatically think it's sexual. So I was like, oh my God, you know, he's got the HIV. Like, I don't know if you want to be squeezing
he's
his red vines.
The monster, yeah, I'm not messing that. I know they catch.
But it turns out, you know, red vines are like the knockoff Twizzlers. You know the Twizzlers?
Oh, I know what a Twizzler is.
Red vines are like the knockoff.
And she squeezes them?
And she squeezes them for him before he eats it. Like, he has her squeeze them.
So what's the lawsuit about?
Well, she got fired because apparently she showed up to work 15 minutes late. But she thinks it's due to something else.
What? Oh, my God.
All right, Lenita Thomas. When your career path is squeezing the red vines for a guy, you show up on time.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
How about you be a little punctual? Work starts at 9 o'clock. Maybe show up at 8:50, Lenita. How's that sound? All you're doing is squeezing red vines all day.
45 years old, Lenita Thomas. Like, I can understand if you're just getting into the real world, you just graduated college.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, jobs are hard to come by, and you're like, you know, you ruined my life. I was on top of the world, and then I had to squeeze your vines, and then.
Yeah, right. I got an MBA or something.
Chick is 45.
She won The Apprentice. Yeah.
And this happened in 2004.
She had never got back on track.
Yeah.
She's been downhill ever since.
Wow.
I love the delayed lawsuit.
Yeah,
like, you know,
8 years ago.
Now I'm starting to think about my childhood. Like, oh, wow, when that dude punched me in the chest, I could no longer bench like I used to be able to bench.
And I would probably be way better off.
I could probably get a sweet, like, three-digit deal out of that, you know? Like, five hundo at least.
Five hundo in Neil's pocket.
In the pocket.
Jackpot. Going to the bar.
That's weird though. Red vines. I guess they must be like tougher and stiffer.
I know the red vines. They don't have the grooves. They're like around. Yeah. They're like a straight like tube.
Yeah. Yeah. So you gotta loosen up a little bit.
I think Magic Johnson should be able to afford the real Twizzlers.
Yeah. What the
red vines are like what you buy to like you know like with Airheads, and I might get a red vine.
Yeah.
And a quarter juice. You can. I mean, Magic, splurge for the Twizzlers, bro.
So you can take the Hall of Famer away from the Red Vines, but you can't take the Red Vines out of the Hall of Famer.
Man likes his Red Vines, man.
So there's a high school in Piedmont, California.
Yeah.
That the principal there has discovered a so-called quote-unquote fantasy slut league.
I heard this.
Yeah, I saw that.
I heard about this, yeah.
In a letter, he describes a fantasy slut league in which our female students, unbeknownst to most of them, are drafted as part of the league. Male students earn points for documented engagement in sexual activities with female students. I mean, this is just like gold.
You hear how long this thing was going on for?
No.
6 years.
Wow.
This was like different classes were coming through.
Yeah,
this graduating,
was like tradition.
Starting their lives.
Yeah.
And some other guy who's leading the league this year. I mean...
Is there like a grandfather clause? Is it a keep 'em league? That's what I don't know. It's got to be a keep 'em league.
Yeah, we got to keep her. Right? Yeah, I'm keeping that one.
Like, is there an auction type draft where it's like, oh, I got to have Christy. She has got DSL.
Yeah. I'm a little weak in my skill positions, but I'm huge at the fat chicks down in study hall.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story. And the guy, the principal, the quote I saw, he was like, well, we're going to use this as a learning experience and we're going to teach kids. Kick these kids out of school, dude. This is like they're like trafficking women.
Yeah, that's borderline Taken territory.
I mean, that's horrible, dude.
I think Liam Neeson showed up and just started cracking skulls.
Yeah, like, hey. My daughter's worth way more than 8 fantasy points.
One parent was quoted saying, I'm really glad that there's a strong administration that's willing to take on these kinds of issues. As a mother of 4 girls, I couldn't be happier. Newsflash, lady, you're 4 girls?
Yeah, they've won a couple weeks.
Yeah.
They've had a couple Monday night killers.
Guaranteed starts. No sit there.
Yeah, I'll tell you that right now.
I mean, they might sit, but it's not
the thing
on the bench.
As we're talking about this and this story's out, there's some guy who's now 23, 24 years old. He's a lawyer somewhere, whatever, you know, and he's got some trophy somewhere or some sort of belt or a T-shirt, like from Yahoo Fantasy Sports.
Yeah.
It says that he won this Piedmont, you know, horrible league. That's happening. We're hosting a podcast out of the Barry after Barn Grill. There we go. What else you got?
So I'm going to switch the order of these because I don't want to get people too hot and bothered. But there's news now that, you know, MMA is catching catching fire. Seems like everyone and their mother is getting into MMA.
So hip, yeah. They got even Kevin James is getting in a...
Even oh, Here Comes the Boom, which is a ripoff of Warrior. Have you ever seen Warrior?
It's a great movie.
Oh, yeah,
great
yeah.
movie. Tom
yeah.
Hardy.
Yeah, yeah that of course,
guy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what Here Comes the Boom is about, but is that...
Here Comes the Boom is about a teacher that gets into MMA to win money to save the music department or something. Like, yeah, guys, can we just stop trying to save the music department?
Yeah.
Like, I know your brother, that's his cream of the crop. That's how he made his living.
That's how he makes his bones, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's a dying breed. We're all going dubstep and EDM, so, you know.
That's it, man.
Maybe if you can do EDM, you save some bucks. You don't have to spend it on the flutes and whatnot.
The clarinets and the...
Synthesizers.
Oboes. So what's the story about?
It's about... I don't know how I got...
Oboes in the woodwind.
I don't know how
family.
To get the Skrillex from MMA, but... a 56-year-old grandmother from Virginia says she deserves a shot at fighting a man in a cage match, MMA cage match.
Hmm.
She's a grandma.
Yeah.
56, a young grandma, so she's, you know, fresh to the grandma game. But if you're the guy, are you good, like, what is your strategy?
You got to punch her right in the face.
I mean, you got to go right for the boob, right?
No, you got to punch her. Yeah, just square in the chest.
Right in the ovary.
Hold her hand, smack her the whole time.
I mean, no, I think if you go in there, you can't take that thing lightly, man, because if you take one bad punch from a grandma, you'll never live it down. This lady is signing. She's going to sign some sort of waiver. She's going to get in there. If you're a dude, you got to look at the little judge and be like, look, I'm going to hit this lady. And then you got to hit that lady. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to. I'd never punch a grandma.
Now,
but if I'm in that lit, I'm going to be like, I'm not going to get punched by
yeah.
a grandma.
Now, you don't even know. You don't even know her size. I haven't even given you the size yet.
What is she?
4'5". And
no,
she's dripping.
7'2".
6'5".
Oh, my
6'5
God.
6'5 grandma.
Which means she's brittle, dude. 6'5 man who's 56 years old is brittle. This old lady.
And she claims she's always been a big girl. She was 200 pounds in grade school.
Oh. Is that right?
So she's been carrying that weight around for a while.
She's like that German chick from Dodgeball.
Yeah.
I think you actually, I think you just punch her right in the stomach.
Yeah.
And just be like, look, and then she goes
Ground
down.
Tom.
And then you just grapple. But then, and then afterwards you say, look, I didn't mean to do that. Then they're a nice gift basket. I don't know. What are you gonna do?
So the quote from her is, I've been a bouncer. I've been a security guard. I've been a stripper. I've done burlesque. I've been a horse trainer.
I'm sure her grandkids are proud.
Yeah. What's left?
My grandma cleaned houses. This lady's a burlesque dancer. I don't know.
My grandma makes, like, potpourri dolls.
But I'm telling you. Yeah, right. Like, she knitted or crocheted.
And my other grandmother just watches TV. Pretty much it.
Yeah. And it turns on by her going like this. Yeah, but, I mean, bottom line is you're in that ring, Neil. She signed off, dude. You can't take her lightly. You got to punch her. Sucks, but that doesn't count as punching an old lady. If she's in the ring, she's no longer an old lady.
Yeah,
she's your enemy.
She's your equal.
She's your equal.
The last story from our little segment here, Greece is in a world of hurt.
Yeah, Greece, 25% unemployment.
Yeah.
They retire at 32. They're in a world of hurt over in Greece.
But I feel like
I no love
it's kind of like an end of the world party every day.
Yeah.
Like there's no rules or there's no lines you can't cross.
No.
Yeah. So
rolling their eyes.
Here's another reason to visit Greece. An amateur Greek soccer club got a sponsorship deal with a bordello that includes free services if they win.
Yeah. I've heard this story as well. It's legal in Greece. It's all on the up and up.
Okay.
They got the brothels are legal there.
When are we going to legalize bordellos here?
When unemployment gets 25%.
I mean, what petition do I have to sign to get this thing going?
Elect Mitt Romney. And then you'll have 25% unemployment and we'll
and
have the bordello.
You have binders full of women.
That's it, man.
That would be the first bordello that he should open up, called Binders Full of Women. And you go in, you get a binder. It's full of women.
It's full of women. Yeah, this girl's got a nice little resume.
Yeah.
Oh, you have an MBA, and now you're working here. Okay, not enough. Look.
They call her Three-Ring Sally.
Look, Greece, they used to be good. I thought they were good at soccer. Wasn't Greece like a good soccer country, like in the World Cups and stuff?
I know
like
they're
that?
Good at wrestling. Greco-Roman wrestling, like, you know, oiled up and just, like, let's just see what happens wrestling.
Yeah. I mean, they were good. We have a lot of Greeks in Norwalk, like a big Greek population, and I feel like they all played soccer. You have a lot of Greeks? And they played soccer at McMahon, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So I felt like Greece would be good at soccer. I don't know. I guess now they're owned by Bordello's.
Yeah.
She owns the team, this lady. Yeah, she owns the team. She owns a Bordello and says, well, I got an extra scratch. I'll sponsor your team.
It's made up, the amateur club is made up of students, pizza delivermen, waiters, bartenders.
See, I didn't know. I thought this was like a legit, like a semi-pro type team. I didn't know it was. This is like a beer league.
Yeah, this is like your softball league being sponsored.
I can't
by
even. I can't.
Flash
even,
dancers down the street.
I can't even get a free Miller Lite to play O'Neill softball. This girl, you know, and O'Neill's is doing well, and we love them. They're a sponsor of the show.
And it's not just one Bordello. It's two separate whorehouses.
Get teamed up.
And the first is called Villa Erotica. You know, kind of classy. And then the other one's called Sola's House of History. So there you go. And my guess is that it's a themed Bordello where, like, they dress up like historical figures.
I think it's like a bathhouse. It's like an old ancient room. There's like bathhouses.
Yeah, like we have like ancient
aqueducts. Yeah.
Yeah. They like the scurvy, and we got. But there's no condoms, obviously. I mean, that's...
No, yeah, you have, like, old... You might come out of there with a plague or something. Yeah. You come out of there in one of those old, like, wooden wagons. They wheel you out of there. Like,
I got the rickets.
Well, I'll tell you, Neil, Duty is Serious never failed to impress me. I'll tell you that. We're going to ship right over. Tony D, you got a couple say
real
words
quick,
or what?
Yes. Gino Auriemma.
Yeah.
He wants to lower the rims in women's basketball. Says the NCAA should lower the rims... I don't know where he came up with this. 7.2 inches for the women's game. Change would boost shooting percentages and interest in women's hoops.
Ridiculous.
Now,
ridiculous.
You say it's ridiculous, but I feel like I'm going to sound sexist here. But, I mean, if you look at the men are across the board taller than women.
Yeah.
So why not? I mean, you have softball, which is smaller dimensions than baseball.
Yeah.
So why not lower the rims and get a couple of windmill dunks out of...
So why don't we lower the rim in high school? Because most... I mean, the NBA, they're just... It's a different, like, you know...
I am all for lowering the rim for women's basketball across the board.
I think that's insane. I think it's absolutely insane.
It would definitely get more viewers. I mean, I'd love seeing women just...
You would get... Nobody's going to watch it anyway. Nobody's going to watch women's basketball,
you don't think you
dude.
Would watch women dunking in each other's faces?
They dunk now that girl Griner
dunk.
Yeah,
it's only one, but I'm talking
but
like...
But I think it's more of an event, like this girl could dunk.
Yeah.
Nobody, I'm not going to watch to see some girl dunk. Like, oh, now, oh, my God, was it 7:30? I got to go run home and see these girls.
I mean, I think I would be.
You watch it one time, it'd be like the XFL, dude. And then you'd never see it again. There'd be some he hate me out there dunking.
She hate so, me. Even so, I don't think 7.2 inches is going to get it. He's going to allow other people
no.
to, you know, most people to dunk anyway. I'm
no.
I'm going to dunk, so.
Yeah, I just want to see.
I couldn't dunk a 9
no, you're gonna have to
5 rim. And I'm 6'2".
Yeah.
I just want to see Brittany Griner do like a Daryl Dawkins.
She would take a quarter off the top of the backboard. I would lower it for some sort of dunk contest. I think it'd be cool if they did it. We'd watch a girls' dunk contest on 9 feet rims.
That would be cool. Absolutely. NFL study finds that Ndamukong Suh is the NFL's least liked player. You guys think that was you said it hit the other night?
Yeah, I did see that hit on the Cutler.
I mean, he trying to break him in half. It looked like.
You know,
and that was the least. Of all the hits on Cutler, that that's like the least offensive.
I don't think it was necessarily dirty. Though.
No, I don't think that was like, you know, fine inducing or anything. But Matt Slauson, who plays for the Jets, played at Nebraska with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes out now. And I don't think Matt Slauson has not been one of those guys that's like out, like trying to get in the paper.
Yeah.
He said that nobody liked that. Nobody liked him at Nebraska. Like he was like the least. And he was a member at Nebraska. He was a god.
Yeah.
Nobody liked him on that team. He's a jerk. And then Colin Cowherd was talking about, like, even in high school, coming out, like, he didn't get recruited. I mean, at the time, Nebraska wasn't great. You know, like, they had some down years. And he wasn't getting recruited. He's from Seattle or somewhere, Oregon or something like that, like somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. And he had real issues in high school, and people didn't like him. So, I don't know.
One more. Ed Werder just tweeted. Listen to this. Court documents indicate that Deion Sanders paid his ex-wife, Pilar, and a $100,000 bonus when she allegedly signed her prenup.
She got a signing bonus. The little girl legitimately got a signing bonus.
And now it's being disputed, but yeah, she signed, and she got $100,000 to sign a prenup.
Ugh. That's awesome. Deion Sanders is awesome. That whole thing is awesome, Neil. You're going to deny that that's not awesome?
That's horrible.
Probably brought out like a suitcase, like, sign it, bam!
Yeah, the briefcase just popped open.
Shazam!
Like his little DirecTV commercial.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And it was like gold bars. It wasn't even cash.
Yeah, he paid her in gold.
That's
he
awesome.
Paid her in like a bag of gold, like Robin Hood.
It just was like a big old necklace that said signing bonus in gold and diamonds.
Here you go, sweet. I mean, that's great.
Oh,
everything about that is great. All right, well, we got 10 minutes left, which is perfect because we got a 5 and 10 coming up.
Sir.
Which I think is good. And what we're going to start with is the move. And we it's not a major sport, but we got to talk a little hockey right now. We had talked about it a while ago. I think when I was still here, and we talked about the Nets moving to Brooklyn, and we talked about whether it was a possibility that the Islanders would go to Brooklyn, and it was like, I don't know, it made so much sense.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, it makes so much sense.
The stadium they're in now is one of the, I think it might be the oldest, or it's one of the oldest.
It's riddled. Like, the workers are going to sue them because they can't even work there.
Right, yeah.
It continuously got voted down. So Long Islanders can't complain about this. It went out to public referendum. They need in Long Island need public referendum, I guess, in Nassau County to fund a new arena. It got shot down. So it's like, what is this team going to do? They were going to move to Kansas City, or they were going to move somewhere back in Canada.
Because Kansas City always works out well.
Oh, yeah. You want to move a franchise and have it succeed, you go to Kansas City. But, I don't understand. And there's Islander fans that are legitimately pissed, and there's people that are pissed that they're keeping the same name. How could it be the Islanders? Now, I'm not from Long Island. I'm not a huge fan of people from Long Island either. I know we got some listeners from the show from Long Island. My roommate's from Long Island. I like, you guys and all, but the rest of Long Island could just float away.
Just sink into the ocean.
Just like Atlantis. Just sink it.
Yeah. Just hang out with Neptune.
Yeah, just sink away. But my thing is this.
With a Sebastian and
why,
Ariel.
What is this? Brooklyn is on Long Island. And people are like, no, it's not. There's an island. You look at this map. An island, the definition of an island is just surrounded by water. It's a little piece of land.
Yeah,
it's surrounded by water.
Right there.
Yeah. If Brooklyn is on Long Island. If you were to just look at a map, if you were just like an alien, be like, well, there's that island. Oh, Brooklyn's on that island. But somehow Long Island is like, Brooklyn's not part of Long Island. And they're all offended by it. How are they going to call us what the island is? Well, they're on this island called Long Island. What are you talking? Am I missing something? Just because I'm not from Long Island? I would love some of these Nassau County people to write on our Facebook wall and tell me why I'm wrong. Queens and Brooklyn are on Long Island.
Yeah.
That's just a fact of nature. Yeah. This is an island.
Yeah.
There's water that goes all the way around it. And there you go. There's Brooklyn. It's on Long Island.
Yeah.
So why are they so upset? You just got a gift from God. You got a $1 billion arena, and they renovated the whole area. You got Jay-Z there, everything. They should be dancing in the streets of
yeah.
Long Island.
Yeah, you're going to get black and white uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
They got boxing over there the other night. Did you see that? They had a big
boxing
match
over
there.
I mean, what is the problem with these people? The Islanders are a joke.
Yeah.
Out of all the franchises in New York, and I like all the bad ones, I don't even like the Islanders. I like the Rangers. Yeah. So it's like, what's the story? Why are you not ecstatic that they're moving there? Am I missing something, Neil? What am I missing?
I don't know. Maybe they're
You're from Jersey, so you see the way I see it. Is that an island?
Yeah,
it's an island. It's
yeah.
very long.
Yeah.
Where is Brooklyn located on Earth? Oh, there it is. On that island that we're looking at.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that?
I mean, honestly, the Islanders could move, I guess, to Manhattan, too. And that would be considered... Manhattan Island, right?
Yeah. It's a block island, buddy. Wherever you want to go. But that's an island. They're still on an island. They moved literally probably 20 miles west, right?
Yeah, bring them to Staten Island.
That's what costumes on the South Shore of Long Island, right?
Yeah.
And they just moved like 20 miles west. Out of that dumpy, asbestos-riddled place that you guys didn't want to renovate. You voted against it.
Because they can't let go of the past. And they it's like a time capsule. It's like a time machine. You walk in there and you feel like, wow, it's the early 80s again.
Yeah,
late
70s. Exactly. If there was ever a congregation of people that thought they were way tougher and cooler than they are, it's people on Long Island. God bless them all. All right, let's move over to...
That said, we're going to make an appearance next week at...
Hey, we'll be at R.F. Riley's.
We'll be at the Foot Locker. And
with the old Nassau College.
Hempstead.
Panda went yard again, 4-0.
Kung Fu. I told you, San Francisco's a lot.
Yard again.
Like I said, San Francisco's a lot. All right, how about we go to another non-sport? Bicycle racing.
Riding your bicycle.
I've been consistent, so we've been on air for 2 years, about my disdain for Lance Armstrong my whole life. I dislike them. I dislike the fact that we now have to even talk about bicycle racing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that you want your little kid to do. Like, hey, you can ride a bike, and then never talk about bicycle racing again. This guy rides bikes. He made it a point where, like, okay, now you ride bikes. Cool. And, you know, it was a cool little story. He had cancer and all, won these races, which is cool.
Cancer's cool.
Well, a lot of cancer survivors do a lot of cool things. They climb Mount Everest, which is awesome. I don't need to watch you climb Mount Everest. Cool. You know what I mean? And now this thing is, there's like a huge movement of like defending Lance Armstrong.
Oh, yeah. ESPN
cheated, but look at all the good he did. No. You know what he did? He put tens of millions of dollars in his pocket.
Yeah. Right.
Now, there was some ancillary money. Clearly, tens of millions of dollars went to cancer research, which is cool and all that. But he almost exploited cancer research to make money.
Right.
Because if it wasn't for him having cancer, he would just be a bike rider.
Yeah.
So it was like this cool thing. He got to hook up with Sheryl Crow and do all that stuff. Got to be in dodgeball.
I mean, all he wanted to do was have some fun.
How can anybody defend him? And there are people calling up like, somebody was on, it was on the Bauer Show, which is out of Hartford, and he has been in Hartford. It's actually a really good show. And they were calling, somebody called up saying, well, everybody was doing it, so I don't blame him for it. Well, then you better be the same person that defends Barry Bonds.
Right.
The guy called up, and Bauer agreed with him. He was like, well.
But, so the difference is, not to cut you off, but.
That's twice. One more time. Go ahead.
I know where the line is.
You were right up to two, my man. Right up to two. You're about to get an Oktoberfest right in the ear hole. What do you got?
20 of the 21 top three finishers from the 7 Tour de France that he won were found guilty of doping.
Yeah.
How many? Say that again.
20 of 21. So top three from the 7 titles that he won, 20 of those 21, whoever the one guy is, just give him all the money.
Yeah, nobody can ride a bike up that mountain, dude. Alps or whatever it is.
And then, of course, the agency that came out and levied the ban or made a statement said that he has no place in bicycle racing, which is a little out of control because he's the only reason we know about bicycle racing.
Exactly. That's why I blame him for that.
Yeah.
I'm openly blaming him for that fact.
Right.
So I agree with you there.
But then on top of that, there was a story today that he's also been stripped of his results from the Boston and New York City marathons.
Good. Everything should be banned from him.
He also won a hot dog eating contest in 2005 in college.
Gone. Gone. Get out of here. Get out of my life, Lance Armstrong. I don't feel bad for you one bit. All right, real quick. Nets tickets. Nets Knicks tickets. Steal at 800, but the average ticket's 800 bucks.
Man, I'm so pissed off. For the last like month and a half, I've been saying to myself, I'm just got to get to trying to get like OKC tickets when they go out there. Totally forgot about it. They went on sale September 22nd. I went on yesterday. The cheapest Sick. One's like 300.
Sick.
It's unreal. And the 300 is like on the baseline. Who wants to sit there? You're not going to be able to see.
Can't see anything. Yeah, you'll be watching the whole thing.
So now, pissed off. I want to see that arena so bad.
Me too. And so they rightly were talking about how they have the hottest ticket in New York right now.
Yeah.
Francesa, of course, big Knicks fan that he is, even though he says he's not. Oh, that's a joke. That's a joke. Tell me what the tickets are going for. The next night, I guess, the Knicks play the Heat. The Knicks Heat tickets are not going for $800.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it is. It has nothing to do with. I'm not saying the Nets are better than the Knicks, but right now.
That's what's hot.
This is one of the coolest things that's happened to New York sports in a long time.
You gotta realize, too, who's
hasn't been a team in Brooklyn since what? The 50s?
And who's going to those games? I mean, it's catering to African American people. They got Jay-Z out there doing his thing. I mean, he's promoting the place. The place is just on fire right now.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean,
it's awesome.
Yeah.
So to try to downplay it, it has nothing to do with. It's not saying the Nets are now better than the Knicks. They're not taking over New York. But right at this moment,
hot right now.
The hottest sports. It's not even close.
Yeah.
It's this.
Brand new arena. It's like, people want to get out there and see this.
We're looking. I'm going to go. I go to a lot of Nets games, but we're looking to go. And I'm looking at tickets. My buddy Paco's a big Hawks fan. We're going to go out in January. We're already looking at tickets, and they're already above.
Yeah, they're up
face.
There. They're up there.
They're not crazy, but they're already above face.
Yeah.
So I think that's awesome. All right, last thing, sticking with basketball. Mari Sotomayor, hurt already. But luckily, they have a couple young bucks to fall back on.
Right.
Rasheed Wallace, Marcus Camby. They got some fresh legs to fill in for Amari.
Yeah. I heard LJ is going to come out of retirement.
Grandmama.
Throw up some four-pointers.
He's got the Grandmama. He's going to fight Grandmama in the MMA ring. I don't know. I think it's going to be a little bit longer season for the Knicks fans than they think. I think they're going to be like a 7-8 seed as opposed to the top 4 seed. They ain't getting a home field.
I don't think they're making the playoffs.
Awesome. It's going to be tough.
You're my man. I love that.
It's definitely going to be tough.
I love you. Nets are the hottest ticket.
Yeah, they sure
we're the Tri-State Sports guys. Check us out. Check me out on Family Feud.
Yeah.
Check Neil out on Dude, Are You Serious?
Video is up on the site.
Everybody's already making fun of me. Dude, I didn't hear the question.
Yeah,
I didn't know
that
they were saying best day of the year.
So, yeah, if you're not aware, this Friday and every Friday from now on is a holiday.
He didn't say holiday.
We get off.
He didn't say holiday.
And Steve Harvey agreed with me. It's a Friday night. That's the place to go out.
All right. Holiday.
We're the Tri-State Sports guys. Check us out next week, Wednesday, 8 o'clock.
Yep. Yeah.
That's fucking great.